evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is Monday, November 19th. We were off last week because of the Veterans Day holiday. The studios are closed here at WEBR Radio, and a lot has happened in the last 2 weeks. I haven't dealt with the campaigns in several weeks, with the exception of an occasional story. So I think we'll catch up a little bit on that, because we actually are getting close to selecting someone to run to be president of these United States. But before I get with that, we'll start with something lighter. And there's not that much light this time around. By light, I mean unimportant. So before we get to foreign affairs and the messes around the world and domestic affairs and the messes here at home, let's just talk with the messes that are not too consequential. And I don't mean to underplay this, because this is not unimportant, but baseball and steroids. It's interesting the reactions that you hear to the indictment of Barry Bonds last week, because for a lot of people they're saying, oh, it's a dark day for baseball. And then there's some analysts that nailed it just right, who said, finally, we're dealing with it. Because if you remember, Barry Bonds has been pretending for several years that he didn't do steroids. But all you have to do is look at the man's head and his arms and his body and look at the change. No one pumps iron that much in that short a period of time and transforms their body through plain working out. It takes years for that level of development unless you're doing steroids. So you're also, even if you bulk up, your hat size doesn't increase significantly like Barry Bonds did. Now, he's a great athlete, one of the greatest in the history of baseball. He didn't need steroids to ensure his place in history, but we'll never know if he could have set the home run record without it. So everybody's talked about the asterisk and all those possibilities. You probably heard this one. This is weeks old now, but I like the story. And that is that the Hall of Fame is going to get the baseball that was the home run ball that Barry Bonds broke Hank Aaron's record with. The problem is there's going to be an asterisk on it. The gentleman who bought it for over $750,000 held a poll on the internet and asked people to vote, what do you think should be done with the ball? Should I destroy it, blast it, explode it? Should I send it into outer space? I forget how he thought he was going to do that. Mark it with an asterisk and send it to the Hall of Fame, or just send it to the Hall of Fame. And the people overwhelmingly chose, put an asterisk on the ball and send it to the Hall of Fame. The gentleman contacted the Hall of Fame and said, would you accept it? And they said, yes, we would accept it with an asterisk. They didn't promise they'd display it, but I suspect they would. And Barry Bonds then jumped in. This is weeks ago, longer. Bonds stepped in and said, if they put an asterisk on that ball and they display it, I'm not coming to the induction ceremony. I think that's what he said. What's interesting is there may not be an induction ceremony. Bonds has been charged with perjury by federal prosecutors. This is not some local sheriff in some town or local prosecutor trying to make a name for him or herself. This is serious federal charges. The feds have an extremely high conviction rate on indictments, 95% or something like that. Bonds is likely to be convicted. They would not have brought these charges if they didn't think they could convict him. And if they do, he's going to prison. Now, I wouldn't put it in the same category as Pete Rose's crime, because Rose broke the cardinal rule of baseball, which is don't hang out with gamblers, don't bet on your sport. Bad things can happen when you start betting. And Rose lied about it for years and years and then finally admitted it. But bigger thing, and this is, I didn't even see the person that, who was it? Was it Boswell in the Washington Post wrote about the comparison and didn't think it was apt? But he failed to point out, too, that the biggest deal about it is that Pete Rose signed his own death warrant. He signed a paper saying that he accepted a lifetime ban from baseball, I guess thinking that that would not include the Hall of Fame or something. Anyway, Pete Rose, his name has never appeared on the ballot. And it may never appear on the ballot for the Hall of Fame, even though he's, well, I used to say he's the most qualified person for the Hall of Fame, in or out, you know, since, well, the 60s probably. But now Barry Bonds is more qualified, in a way, for the records he holds. And yet, a federal crime, a conviction about lying about steroids could keep him from getting on the ballot. Mark McGuire also used steroids. He lied to a congressional committee about it. I don't think he's been indicted yet or found in contempt. But I know, I'm assuming he lied. He could, he might still claim that that was all natural muscle. But he was on the ballot for the first time a year ago, was it? He got 25% of the sports writers to vote for him. Now, on the Hall of Fame ballot, you need 75% of the votes of the sports writers who vote to vote for you in any given year to be elected to the Hall of Fame. Many sports writers refuse to vote for someone in their first year unless they are a super-duper star with super stats, because it's a rare honor to be elected the first year you're on the ballot. So you have to be really up there to be elected in your first year on the ballot. I'm trying to think who the last people were. I don't keep up with it close enough. Mike Schmidt, great third baseman for the Phillies in the 70s and 80s, might have been elected on the first ballot. I forget. Ozzie Smith may have been elected on the first ballot. People like that. Certainly Nolan Ryan, when he's up. I don't think he's been out of baseball 5 years yet. And Steve Carlton probably was on the first ballot, people like that. Certainly Roger Clemens will be elected on the first ballot. But beyond that, they reserve that honor for the best of the best. So it's possible you wouldn't have elected Mark McGuire on the first ballot anyway. But 500 home runs is a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame, so he will get in is the logic, but only 25% of the voters voted for him. You know what an insult that is to Mark McGuire? So we'll see what happens to Barry Bonds, but baseball basically is going to turn the corner on steroids in this whole steroids era, I think. And people are going to learn you cannot lie to investigators with impunity or immunity. So we'll see what happens, but Bonds is going to prison. I think the other factor going on here is that a lot of people just don't like Barry Bonds. He's never liked the media, and he's never been friendly to the media. So his perception among the public is that he's not a nice guy. And so that, you know, he can say, oh, I don't care what the fans think. But in fact, public perception hurts you in a situation like this. If people are glad you're indicted, and the reaction from sports fans has been pretty brutal, that's a problem for a sports fan. Anyway, enough about Barry Bonds and the world of steroids. There's a gentleman who died here in Fairfax County last week. His name was Chris Gugas. And his claim to fame, you would probably never have heard of him, his claim to fame is that he administered over 40,000 lie detector tests in his life. Now, that's a lot of lie detectors tests. Now, that's twice as many as lie detector tests as Wilt Chamberlain claimed women he slept with. I remember Wilt Chamberlain did his autobiography a few years before he passed away. I think he might have died at age 65 or something, and claimed to have slept with 20,000 women in his life. Well, do the math. Let's assume he found a different woman to sleep with every day of the year, 365 a year. Oh, let's round it up to 500 a year and assume that he gets two a day for another 135 days out of the year, another third of the year. 500 a year, that's 10,000 in 20 years. So it would take him 40 years at that pace from age, let's say age 15 to age 55, to reach 20,000. They should have given Will a lie detector test. No, he probably believed it. He wouldn't have shown up as lying. He just might have shown up. If they had an exaggeration test, maybe he'd have shown up. Anyway, Chris Gugas gave over 40,000 lie detector tests. Now, that's believable because you don't need to recover from a lie detector test. You can give another one just an hour later, you know? But he founded three polygraph organizations. And now, this is no lie. In the course of his life, he wrote two books about lie detector tests, one in the 70s, one in the 80s, founded three companies about them, and gave over 40,000 lie detector tests. He did this for 30 years. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. And let's not get carried away here. Let me make sure people understand where I stand on this. The lie detector test is mildly useful. It can be an indicator of excitement and therefore lying in some cases, but it doesn't detect truth-telling versus lying. It just detects nervousness at one stage of the interview as opposed to normal level of excitation at the rest of the interview. And so we infer from there that somebody's excited for a reason and they're therefore lying. But it's also been shown that people can fool lie detector tests, like sociopaths, can be calm and they don't get any reaction when they lie. So it's not a perfect measure by any means, and that's why it's not admissible in court. And that's why when people say, I took a lie detector test, or, you know, like the Ramseys in the JonBenet case said they took a lie detector test, or maybe they never, yeah, they took their own. They had their own polygraph examiner, but they wouldn't submit to the FBI's, right? So, of limited usefulness, but Chris Gugas gave 40,000 of them, so that's a milestone. And let's see what else. Oh, there was an interesting article in today's Washington Post, November 19th, 2007, about frames of reference. Now, this is a psychological term, but the way it was presented was interesting, and it was this, that when we make judgments about how much to do something or how much we do something, we often err. We're often off by a wide margin. Or we make mistakes when we decide how much to do something. The examples they gave in the article were, how much time do you think it will take you to do your Christmas shopping? How much food should you eat at a meal? Let's take Thanksgiving meal on Thursday, this Thursday. Or how much do you think we should spend in the war in Iraq? And what they said was, it's a matter of your frame of reference. Let's take food. I'm going to start with money, actually. So let's say that we go to the mall to buy a few things. We got a couple things picked out. And your frame of reference determines how much you spend often. And that's the reason that financial planners suggest you use cash for a lot of transactions if you have trouble limiting your spending. If you want to limit your spending, pay cash for everything. Because if you're going to pay cash, your frame of reference is, how much cash do I have in my pocket? So let's say you have $200 with you. You're less likely to spend extravagantly, in part because you only have $200. But when you look at an item that costs $39.95, you will consider it in terms of, well, I have $200 with me, $39.95, let's round it up to $40, that's 20% of what I have with me. And so, do I want to spend 20% of what I have with me on that item? Whereas if you're going to put it on a Visa card, your Visa card has you may have a $5,000 limit, or you may think of it in terms of, how much money do I have in the bank to cover my Visa card, or how much are my total assets? Any way you look at it, your frame of reference is much larger, so a $40 item is nothing to put on your Visa card. Plus, it's painless, you don't have to pay for it for months. But psychologists argue that it's a frame of reference thing. Now, let's take how much we eat. If your frame of reference is, oh, if I eat this candy bar, it's 250 calories, I'll have to work out an extra 20 minutes tonight to get rid of it, you might not eat it. Whereas if you say in terms of, well, I can take in so many calories per week, and this candy bar only adds 250, over the course of the week I'll do plenty of exercise. When you look at larger frames, the amount of calories seems smaller by comparison, so you go and you have the candy bar. At least, that's what I do. May not be what you do. In any case, the basic principle is that there's the tendency to go out and overindulge if you use the wrong frame of reference. You spend too much, you eat too much, you take too much time doing something, however you look at it. So the basic principle is shorten your frame of reference when you want to monitor your behavior. So if you don't want to eat as much on Thanksgiving, think in terms of how long will it take me to burn those calories and how will I burn them all today? You may have one fewer portions of mashed potatoes and gravy. In any case, that's all I really need to say about that. And with that, I want to move on to the campaigns. A lot's been going on in the campaigns in the last 2 weeks. And let's start with the Republicans. The most interesting storyline is Mike Huckabee. He is getting all kinds of good press and apparently is neck and neck with the other leaders. He might even be in the lead in Iowa. He's in second place in most of these polls in Iowa, and he's not spending nearly as much as people like Mitt Romney, who has spent millions in Iowa and New Hampshire. Now, Huckabee's an interesting character because a lot of people argue that he's the true conservative in this race who has a chance. Of course, they say that about Fred Thompson, but the other candidates have flaws. Well, Fred Thompson's is that he may not have the fire in his belly, as they say. It's not clear why he wants to be president or that he wants it bad enough. Mitt Romney has flip-flopped on so many issues. Giuliani has flip-flopped on fewer issues, but he's asking social conservatives to swallow a hard pill. The Republicans haven't nominated a pro-choice person in a long time, although Giuliani's promising to renounce his own principles when it comes to naming judges, and apparently many Republicans or conservatives are going to believe him on that. So it remains to be seen if Huckabee can mix it up here, because there's no sign that anybody on the Democratic side is going to emerge from the second tier and have much of an impact. That would be below Hillary, Obama, and Edwards. Frankly, I don't think Edwards is going to have much of an impact. But the idea that Huckabee could come from back in the pack and have an impact would be like, I don't know, Joe Biden suddenly shaking things up in Iowa, or Chris Dodd, and that seems so unlikely on the Democratic side. The one thing to remember about Huckabee is that he's a former governor of Arkansas, and he is from Hope, Arkansas. That reminds you of anybody. Another thing to remember about him is he is one of the three Republicans who raised their hands in an early debate, eager to let the crowd and the country know that they don't believe in the theory of evolution. Now, what's amazing is that you can make a stunning admission like that and still be considered a serious candidate for national office. There were three of them that raised their hands, if I can remember who they were. It was Tom Tancredo, the congressman from Colorado, who has banked his presidential hopes on his stand against illegal immigrants, a hardcore send them all back approach. It's Huckabee, and then it was somebody that dropped out of the race, I think. Or did Tancredo already drop out? No. It was, I'll think of it. It doesn't even matter. But it's pretty amazing in this day and age. You know, in 1925, when we had the Scopes monkey trial, if you didn't believe in evolution, you could be forgiven for not keeping up with science such as it was at the time, because while the evidence was pretty solid, we didn't expect the average person to understand the world around them. But today, you really should understand the world around you if you're going to be elected. And it's not, science is not a popularity contest. You know, you could say to me, well, George Bush and Mike Huckabee don't really believe that evolution isn't true. They're just willing to have intelligent design taught alongside it in schools because politically that's what their base of voters wants. No, you need a president who's grounded in reality. And we've seen what happens when we elect a president who's not particularly well grounded in reality. You get George W. Bush, who makes up his reality, or when the neocons tell him that reality will be a cakewalk, he says, okay, sign me up. You want somebody a little more grounded in reality than Bush or Huckabee. Let's move on, though, to a couple of the other things that are going on. The other big story in the campaign is what's going on with Giuliani. The first thing is that last week, Bernard Kerik was indicted on a number of counts. And, of course, that's bad news for Rudy Giuliani, although he's trying to distance himself from Kerik now and claim that his support for Kerik was just his failure to properly vet him, to check into him deeply enough. But let's take a look at that for a minute. Bernard Kerik was his driver originally. He drove his limo. And Giuliani eventually made him a trusted friend, ally, and advisor, made him police commissioner, head of the Bureau of Corrections in New York, then police commissioner, and then he recommended him to George W. Bush and pushed him hard to be Director of Homeland Security. You talk about a meteoric rise. I mean, who else is driving limos out there today who in 10 years we think will be ready to be Director of Homeland Security? I'm guessing not many. I just think that's just so bizarre that Giuliani saw this in this guy. So he wants to pass it off as he should have vetted him better. No, you got to know this man for 10 years, and you didn't realize what he was? How's that possible? Do you know what they'd be saying if Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama had someone that close to them, who they were pushing for higher office, who was indicted on the charges Kerik's been indicted on? He's got mob connections, and they were well known. Giuliani was told about this, and he poo-pooed it, apparently. It's all pretty bizarre. I mean, they got him on graft and corruption. They got him, he and his mistress used an apartment that was supposed to be reserved or made available for 9/11 workers cleaning up at the 9/11 site. And he was using it to have his affair with Judith Reagan and the other woman he had affairs with. This is a married man, of course. And so it's going to be interesting to see, but I don't think too much will come of it now. I mean, his rivals may make whatever they make of it, but Giuliani has this caricature life. You know, the pictures of him dressing in drag, the fact that he announced in a press conference that he was getting divorced from his second wife, and then she went and held her own press conference to rat him out. His children are estranged from him or won't campaign for him. He's got a tabloid kind of a life. And then most recently it came out that Judith Reagan, the author and publisher, she was had her own imprimatur, Reagan Publishing or whatever, under Rupert Murdoch. She has said that Fox News executives, or one particular Fox News executive, News Corp executive, asked her to keep quiet about her affair with Kerik so that it wouldn't hurt Rudy Giuliani's chances to be elected to the Senate back when he thought he was going to run against Hillary for the Senate. That's all pretty strange. Anyway, when we come back, we are going to talk not about that so much, but we're going to continue a little bit with Rudy and then move on to a couple of other things that are going on in the Republican race and then walk over and take a look at the Democratic race.